seated. I had one of those days this week that was totally consumed with the urgent but unimportant. Or maybe another way of putting it would be things that are important but do not matter. If I can say it clearly enough, you'll know what I mean. Those things we have to do, and we know why we have to do them, and even agree that people should do them, and the process of doing them feels so far away from why we got into whatever enterprise is making us do them. Paperwork, budget reconciliation, inventory, or in my case, canon law, the rules by which the Episcopal Church governs itself. A great read, full of edifying content. It was a day full of unpleasant, necessary trivialities. And then, at the end of the day, my family got some soul-shaking news about someone with a very close connection to us. Now, I don't claim that it's a spiritual law or anything, but I've noticed it in my life. The sublime or the grotesque, life or death, spring up suddenly and unexpectedly out of a field of the banal and mundane. Sometimes it's something we can't miss, like an encounter or a phone call or even just a burning in our soul. And other times it's something more subtle that we might miss. A sunset spread out across the sky, a memory dancing around the edges of our mind, a sound we might go investigate or might brush off. But when we notice, there's a shuddering shift to another level of living. Either that mundane stuff is left feeling hollow, or the extraordinary feels surreal. But one of those levels suddenly feels like real life, and the other one doesn't. I think that following Jesus around must have been full of those kinds of moments. One moment he's just walking around or eating or taking a bath, and then suddenly something miraculous happens. Someone is healed, or sometimes just as miraculous, the truth is spoken without a trace of self-interest or fear. Today's gospel reading has skipped over the banal, but there was actually quite a bit of it right before our reading. We've actually skipped over quite a lot and leapt from the day before Jesus' triumphal entry to Jerusalem to Tuesday in Holy Week. We've skipped over what we usually remember at Palm Sunday with the palm branches. We've skipped over Monday's raid of the temple when Jesus is flipping over tables and chasing money changers with a whip. And we've skipped the arguments of Tuesday morning. This scholar, this scribe, comes to Jesus in a friendly mood, but that's a stark departure from how the Lord's conversations have been going that morning. After Jesus disrupted the business at the temple on Monday, the effort of the religious authorities all day Tuesday has been to trap him. They're hoping to get him to say something that they can use to have him killed. And so they keep posing him puzzlers, It's a very high-stakes pub trivia night. Not exactly mundane, because the stakes are very high indeed. But no one in these exchanges is asking questions that actually matter to them. The religious leaders ask Jesus where his authority comes from. He replies by asking a question about John the Baptist that they are unwilling to answer. And so Jesus says, "Then I won't answer your question either." They ask him whether people should pay taxes, and he gives them one of the most famous non-answers of all time. "Give to Caesar what is Caesar's, and to God what is God's." Then they ask him, perhaps getting desperate, a bizarre question about a childless woman who had seven successive husbands. The questioners themselves don't believe in resurrection, but they ask who she'll be married to after the resurrection. The whole exchange that we skipped is strange, false, and hollow. They are asking questions they don't care about, and Jesus is swatting them aside almost dismissively, generally without answering the questions. It reads like watching a congressional hearing grilling an official from the opposing political party. And then this scribe comes along. He has heard the empty, testy exchanges, and he cuts straight to the heart of the matter. Now, this wouldn't be an unusual question for a teacher to be asked, and Jesus' answer is not revolutionary. But coming after the long exchanges with the religious authorities, this conversation feels like we have suddenly reached the real world. Like the breeze has started blowing, and we only then realize how stagnant the air had been. Like our beloved has come home, and in a moment we realize how lonely we had been. In a forest of high-stakes trivialities, a shaft of the light of truth cuts through to show the long-lost path home. In an instant, we're talking about what matters most. Of course, what matters most always matters most. To love God with everything we've got and everything we've been given, and to love our neighbors truly as best as we know how, is always the most important thing. It doesn't have to come as an epiphany at the end of a day of drudgery to be the most important. And it really is just one thing. Dorothy Day was right when she said, "I only really love God as much as I love the person I love the least." That doesn't mean, though, that we don't have to do all of that other stuff. Paperwork and inventory and canon law and folding the laundry. Our friend the scribe said, "This is more important than all whole burnt offerings and sacrifices." But he didn't say that whole burnt offerings and sacrifices don't matter. Other things matter too. But they matter as ways of expressing or enabling our love for God and our neighbors. We do them at our best because we love God and neighbor. And when we cannot do these things out of love that we may have stumbled on something not worth our time. On the staff, we agreed this week that I should give a stewardship sermon this morning, since our pledges are due next Sunday. We build our budget together out of the goods we all give to address the needs we think are most important I think, in an unconventional way, this counts as a stewardship sermon. Because a stewardship campaign really should call us all, givers, staff, and budget setters, back to what is most important. Let's build a budget for next year that expresses and enables our love for God and our neighbors. Let's build a life together that expresses and enables our love for God and our neighbors. Amen.